It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There are many places you can go to rub elbows with celebrities. Swanky hotels, chic restaurants, or you could meet Chris Brown, Martha Stewart, Michael Vick, or Joe Exotic, among others, here. A seat on this airline is by exclusive invitation of the U.S. government. Welcome to Con Air. In 1997, Nick Cage starred in an action thriller about an airline specifically for convicts. While the movie is fiction, the airline is not. Run by the United States Marshals Service, it has many names. The Justice Prisoner and Alien Transportation System, or JPATS, or as the title of the Nick Cage movie, Con Air. This is Chasing Evil, and I'm Chris Gotsick. With me today is Mark McPherson, chief of JPATS. Welcome, Mark.
Good morning, Chris.
Jeff Kelly, aviation enforcement manager.
Good morning.
Good morning. 26 years on the job he is. And Mark Johnson, Laurel Edwards, and Joe Geist, who are supervisory aviation enforcement officers. Welcome, everyone. All right, Mark, let's just dive into Con Air. We know a little bit about it from the movies, but let's start separating fact from fiction.
It's just like the movies, Chris. Just okay. Whatever you see.
You on,
yep. I think we can wrap it up right there.
Yeah. Thanks for coming, everyone.
There you go. I like to give a correlation that's kind of like FedEx, right? So on one end, we have a customer and we have clients, and we are asked to transport prisoners from one location to another, just like a FedEx package, right? So we have two customers. We have the Bureau of Prisons and then the United States Marshal Service. And both of those agencies have needs to move prisoners around across the country.
Why would a prisoner need to move around the country?
A lot of reasons, a lot of different reasons. You know, to take the low-hanging fruit here, the Bureau of Prisons own and operate many prisons in the country. We may move a prisoner during the time that he's sentenced four or five times. Just take, for example, if someone in Idaho gets sentenced to some time, but they're facility to that they're going to serve their time in is in Florida. Well, there's a need to move that prisoner, so we right. conduct those moves.
And you got a fleet of jets to do so.
We do. We operate a fleet of 737 Boeing 737 aircraft.
And we'll get into it more, but you also contract out for some smaller airframes for some VIPs.
That's correct. We lease a small aircraft to move someone that might have a lot of media attention or someone that has garnished long sentences that may not be someone we want to move in with a general population.
We're going to get into that. Laurel.
Yes.
Way down there at the other.
Good morning.
Hotel. Good morning. Before you came here, you were at the Bureau of Prisons.
That's right.
As a correctional officer.
Yep. 5 years BOP.
How did you choose that as a vocation?
My mother hated it, so that's why I went into it. No, I'm just kidding. I just didn't want to go into the family business.
But I do have to ask, what was the family business?
Flower shops.
Boy, you did go the other way.
Yeah.
Do you regret that now?
Some days.
Okay. I was here this morning I got here at 6 a.m. This is when they start the briefings and the loading of the planes. And Oklahoma City, actually, is interesting because it has its own prison on the airfield.
That's correct.
Yep. And then you go up and they have a jetway. And just like you're boarding a Southwest flight, they get on there. Fewer fights, probably, on your flights.
Absolutely. Yeah, our pilots tell us all the time that they feel safer on this particular aircraft than they do on a commercial, because most of our pilots come from the commercial world.
So. And the belly chains and the feet chains do help
That's absolutely correct.
Right. How do you get your inmates ready for travel? Like, what's the process on that?
Well, we usually start off the morning prior to the mission. There's a manifest that comes out that has all the trip information on it. Mm-hmm. We'll go over to the prison in the morning. We have a crew that goes over there, and they will use that manifest to call the prisoners out and ID them first, again, visually and by number and whatever identifiers that we need. They'll go into the rotunda and get hooked up in the morning, the tops and bottoms and the three-piece suit, as we like to say, and then we push them on the airplane.
You have something that you guys call the black box prisoners. And what is that?
It's an extra security device that goes on the prisoners. It lessens the amount of movement that they can use with the regular handcuffs.
And who might get that?
Anyone that has some kind of identifier for them for like a propensity for violence. Maybe they're they just got in a fight in their cell before they came out, and the Bureau of Prisons said they wanted to put a black box on them. Mostly security reasons.
Uh-huh.
And Chris, okay. We'll also put those on folks that we've already identified as having had a propensity to try to manipulate the restraints.
I don't remember his name, but one of you guys may remember, but I believe he was Cuban. And if you didn't put big boys on him with his black box, he would break the black box and his handcuffs off and then hand them to you. I wish I could remember his name. Big old, big guy.
How did he break his cuffs?
I think he used the black box as leverage because he was that strong and would twist his wrist in a fashion that it would just break the whole thing off. And he would stand there. You would expect that to be a bad thing. I think he did it more than once, if I remember right. His whole thing was he would get hooked up in the morning and, hey, I need big boys. He traveled a bit. He knows what he's talking about.
Right.
And
so, Chris, just for your awareness, big boys are referring to cuffs that are oversized.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Oversized cuffs.
Okay, yeah, thank you for that.
For large individuals.
Yes.
Calling all lovers of mystery. Prepare to don your detective hat in June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. Take a trip in time to the glitzy 20s and play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. The thrill is endless, with new chapters added weekly, allowing you to not only enjoy the detective adventure, but also to personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island, where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
And so the officer that was putting the handcuffs on, I know what I'm doing. I'm the boss around here. Well, they wouldn't put the larger oversized cuffs on him. He's like, all right. He'll get on the airplane. He's one of the guys that has a box on, so he sits towards the rear of the plane. And he would, as soon as he sat down, he would break those handcuffs off and just hand them to the guy. He just wants his big boy handcuffs on. He didn't cause any problems, but he had the ability. I think somebody's got a pair of, yeah, I think somebody's got a pair of Mark's got a pair of the ones that he broke off. So,
yeah. Yeah. His name is Montgomery, actually.
That's right.
Yeah. I heard that he could do this, so I took him to the back of the aircraft and put him in the bathroom, turned around. I said, I didn't believe he could do it. So he did. So they're in my office. He was nice about it. I mean, obviously.
Have you ever seen anybody else who's ever been able to break their handcuffs off?
I mean, they can be done. It's a manipulation of how it's been, how it's done. You can break them pretty easy, actually.
So. I would imagine the first time that happened, it would kind of freak you out a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if he was mad, not just doing it because I said he couldn't do it.
Right. So. Right. Okay. Well,
thankfully, though, we hadn't seen very many people do that, though.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, interesting enough, something so simple I found so fascinating. So you're putting people in a pretty confined space. So the first thing I thought of was, does the gang affiliation come into play? And do you look at that when you're seating people on a plane?
We do, for sure. We have an IRS report that comes out every morning about like high profile that's going to be on the aircraft, separatees, gang affiliations. So they really take into account where these inmates are going to be sitting, make sure they're not next to each other.
I would assume that you get certain gangs from certain areas. Like you'll get a lot more MS-13 in Texas and New York. Do they tend to be in groups or do they tend to be more individuals? Like you're not going to get five guys from MS-13 on one flight, are you?
Yeah, you could. And there's been times when we picked up on that and there was some kind of number that we felt uncomfortable with, and we'd made phone calls and had changes made to that. So yeah, that does happen. And I don't remember what they are, but yeah, they, depending on where you're at, you get more of a certain type of gang.
Mm-hmm. Talking about MS-13, we just had a request by the Bureau of Prisons. They decided to house their MS-13s in certain facilities, and most of them were not in those facilities. So they made a request for us to move a large number. We ended up moving 71 MS-13 gang members on one particular flight. And so,
oh wow,
believed at this time to probably be the largest flight of
definitely
of those types of that gang. For sure. at one time. So
did that flight require a little bit extra precautions?
Definitely. Yeah, well, there was mitigation there on crew members and who and extra preparation.
Security personnel, yeah. For sure.
So you're separating them by gang affiliation. You're separating, I noticed, the men and the women in different parts of the aircraft. That's normal as well?
Yeah, Chris, a lot of these guys hadn't had any contact with females other than the officers that work in their facilities. And so when they get a chance to talk to the females, they certainly take advantage of it. So we do our best to keep them separated and try to keep those problems down.
Does that become a problem at all?
Oh, it could. If you allowed it, it could be a problem for sure.
What other considerations go into where you're seating different people?
Well, you spoke about earlier, or we touched briefly on the black boxes, right? So
right.
Those folks are already identified. We generally try to seat those folks, separate them from each other.
Right.
Usually try to put them in a place where they can't do anything if they so inclined, which would maybe be a window seat.
There is more service going on this plane than you get on any commercial flight you take. There is a medic. He said he has a lot of blood sugar issues. A lot of the prisoners are on insulin. They sometimes have cardiac events. But my last United flight did not have a medic on it. So,
but they may have had to call for, sometimes they do call for a medic.
They can call for one, but if you're in the air, it's better to have one on
That's
on the
right.
flight with you. And a medic goes on every flight.
Every flight, yeah.
Every flight. Have you been aboard when there have been any medical episodes?
Yeah, we have. That's a lot more frequent than the physical type altercation with the inmates. So they, as you can imagine, a lot of the guys that we haul around and the girls, they have medical needs that are taken care of, by the system. So it does happen, and sometimes the paramedic will hook them up to a machine and say, we need to get this guy on the ground. Having some kind of cardiac issue or something, it could be other things. Usually it's cardiac epilepsy or episodes are quite frequent as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we have to get them on the ground, and that starts a whole nother ball rolling, a big change to your day. And when that happens, that's for sure. You've got delays and taking care of the sick person as well.
Right.
So.
And then you'll land at any airport.
We do, depending on the nature of the problem. They will land if they have time. If the medic tells them that, we've got 20 or 30 minutes, but we need to get him on the ground. So the pilots might work with the medic on which airport they want to go to, depending on where we are located. Mm-hmm. In the United States, right. In the air, a place that would have or provide better medical care for the situation that we're dealing with.
It's crazy. I actually had two medical emergencies at the same time. One guy had stopped breathing. And the guy sitting next to him said, hey, I don't think this guy's breathing. And so I had a medic take him, and he's giving this guy CPR on the ground while we're trying to get an ambulance there for him. And then just 5 minutes later, I get a call to the back, another guy having a heart attack, legit heart attack, for real. So I've got two ambulances at the same time, one at the front, one at the back, dealing with two guys in distress.
And you happened to be on the ground at the time.
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
We were on the ground. Thankfully.
That's thankfully. Lucky.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So okay. It's happened.
Okay.
It's happened.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how it happened to Montgomery also. That last flight we took him, he had a heart attack and didn't make it.
Yeah.
So he made it off our airplane alive, but after that, not so much.
This is the guy who broke the cuffs.
Mm-hmm.
He had a heart attack.
Yeah.
While you were in the air?
No, we were just landed in Florida when he started having it. He had to be taken out by an ambulance still, though.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
And then you also take an engineer should something go wrong with the airframe. Again, not something that they normally do on a commercial flight, but we'll just take an engineer in case something goes wrong. I love that.
Yeah, and that's been really helpful for our division, really.
You know, so I went up on the plane today, and I'm expecting Conair. I am expecting some individual steel cages.
Super disappointing.
Was a little disappointing, I'm not going to lie. I just expected a little bit of like a flying fortress. And what I got was a Southwest flight.
A regular airplane.
It's a regular airplane. Yeah. It was a little less exciting than I was hoping for. To be honest, I was looking for like something like, oh, this is where when we have Hannibal Lecter on, this is where we put him. It was shockingly normal. And the inmates were just, I guess, maybe happy to get out of a cell. So this is like a treat to do something at least a little bit different.
Yeah, Chris, so there's very few modifications made. I mean, these aircraft were formed, you know, the government bought them from a commercial vendor.
Right.
And they were utilized in commercial air industry. And so very few security upgrades or features. You saw that airplane. That's the way all our aircraft are outfitted. And no cages. No. The only thing they got is a seatbelt and, of course, the restraints that they're wearing.
Now, I can request a seat assignment. On a commercial flight. So perhaps I couldn't get on this flight and request an aisle seat. Mm. Kind of midway through the flight, you know, midway in the airframe. That you can't do.
It actually depends on how you act. Because if you act up, we'll take you to the back and we will make sure we give you a nicer seat.
I don't like to sit in the back of the
plane. Well, then you would not.
I won't act up. And then a friend of mine, I was telling him I was doing this podcast with J-Pats. He goes, you know what? What do they serve? Do they serve, do they get soda? Do they get peanut? Like what?
Bologna. A lot of bologna.
Okay. So
it smells bad.
So if you're a fan of bologna, this is a great day for you.
It's probably not good bologna.
Okay.
And half the time it's frozen. So half the inmates are putting it up on the windows to unthaw their meat before they can eat it.
Is that's actually true?
100% true.
They put the, say just one more time so I can kind of wrap my head around
it. So when the prison sends out the lunches, it's a pre-made box lunch.
Okay.
And it comes packaged and they freeze them.
Right.
And the meat, the bologna, is still frozen. So inmates will put it up on the window to heat it up.
So this is where they do their lunch prep.
This is where they cook their bologna. Yes, sir.
Okay. That would be That would be a great picture to get of just like every window covered by pieces of bologna.
Yeah. So the Marshal Service, we don't buy lunches. Okay. We generally ask that the facility that's holding them bring them out with a Johnny sack with a lunch.
Okay.
And so it ranges. We could get we get bologna sandwiches. We get I don't know what else we get, Mark.
They get a lot of crackers.
Crackers.
Cheese crackers.
And
kind of sounds like a little bit of an MRE.
Yeah.
A military MRE.
You're not getting a business class service on.
Yeah, it's not that good.
No.
Yeah, and they got to be careful with like peanut butter sandwiches and stuff because of allergic reactions and stuff like that as well. So it's usually no peanuts or peanut butter or nothing like that.
Oh, okay. Right. No in-flight entertainment.
Just
us. Yeah.
Just the local stand-up comedians that may be employed.
Okay. And before we start getting into your, you know, clientele that everybody is familiar with, you also have another airframe for your VIPs. That's essentially a private jet.
A small jet, yeah.
That's kind of a posh experience, as they say in the United Kingdom, yes?
Yeah, it's set up, you know, most as most small jets are, you know, with nice seating and some amenities in there that you won't find obviously on a large craft.
No bolognese on the window?
Not usually on the small one, no.
Oh, okay.
That's usually just a cracker meal for them because right. It's so small in there. It's hard to really transport anything extra on that.
And no flight attendant?
Just our beautiful faces right here. There's usually three security staff, and then there's also a medic on that one as well.
Yeah. The next subject that I was just truly fascinated by that I really shouldn't be, and I have no excuse to be. They can ask her to the restroom?
Correct.
Is that a common occurrence?
Yes, but we usually, sometime during the flight, we'll actually run what we call a P-call, and we go through the cabin from the back to the front and ask them if they need to go, and as they do, we send them back with officers in the back assisting the doors and the movement of the inmates.
Right. They're not allowed to close the doors?
No.
Right. So that's a little, I guess, when you're used to that way of life, that's not that shocking.
That's pretty common for them, probably.
Right. So,
they're being watched all the time.
And to go to the restroom seemed to be, okay, I get it. But if you really need to go to the restroom, if you know what I mean, I was looking at the restraints and I found my body doesn't turn that, I don't have that much leeway, a freedom of movement. How do the prisoners manage that to do their business? And I'm not going to lie, I'm fascinated by the answer. How do they manage to do their business if they are restrained like that? Laurel, you look like you have an answer.
No, they. The first question I always ask, well, are you going to take off the handcuffs? Well, no, under no circumstances will we take off handcuffs.
Right.
And especially the females. They think that we are going to take them off because they just can't obviously stand there, and we'll tell them no. And they think it's the end of the world. If you really have to go to the bathroom, you're going to figure out how to wipe yourself. So, and that's the biggest thing is we, under no circumstances, are going to remove those handcuffs.
Gentlemen, for the guys who are wearing the black boxes, can it be done? Do you have to be a contortionist to make that happen?
Oh, they figure out ways to get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, if they have to go through the front to get it done, they'll go to the front to back. I mean, whatever it takes to
okay.
get it.
Okay. All right. Well, I didn't know we'd get that explicit, but thank you.
Our biggest thing is security.
Right.
And we want to make sure our guys are safe, our staff members are safe.
Okay.
And some of these guys, they may be using the restroom as a ploy to get out of a restraint and pull out some type of weapon that could be keistered. So. Those are things that
we're not going to necessarily define keistered, but I think you can kind of figure it out. As we've heard in, I forget what what comedy it was. Was it like 22 Jump Street? Your prison wallet.
There you go. That's the same one. We're talking about the same thing. Absolutely. Okay. But those guys, they figure it out. They figure it out.
Right. And what about fights? What kind of frequency do you get with inmates fighting?
Thankfully, it doesn't happen very often, but it certainly can happen. One of the ones I remember that comes right to the front of my mind, we were leaving Florence, Colorado, where the
ADX
is. Yeah, exactly.
Home of El Chapo.
Yeah. So we had just taken off, and we get called to the back. And there was a guy that slipped his chain, actually. He had slipped his belly chain. And had, for no reason at all, just decided he wanted to take out the guy in front of him and start choking him with it. So our guys obviously were right on top of it and got the two separated pretty quickly. But had they not been, it could have been a bad day for that.
And do you know what the source of the altercation was?
He didn't know him. Guy said he had never seen the guy before. Yeah, just totally random. Nobody saw that coming. Yeah, it was just out of the blue.
Wow.
Yeah, and we moved that guy several times before and after that and never had any other problems with him. You just never know, man. You never know.
Right.
Yeah, you never know.
So going back a little bit to one of the topics you talked about earlier about, you know, we don't have the cage in there, right? So what do we do when somebody gets really out of hand? And so one of the things that we have are special restraints that we will allow those folks to be, we'll haul them, put them back to the back of the aircraft.
Hold on one second. I just want to say, Laurel, thank you very much for doing the podcast. Laurel is going to get LASIK tonight or today. So good luck with the LASIK, and thank you for participating.
Hey, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. All right. Go ahead.
Yeah, but one of the things that happened, if these guys get out of hand, we're able to get them back to the back of the aircraft. And then really, you know, the term is a rip restraint, but it allows these folks to pretty much attach them to the seat.
Oh,
and allow it so that they're not, it kind of restricts their movement down. And I know that happens, I would say once a month, maybe.
Correct.
Yep. A couple times a month.
Sounds about right.
Oh, okay, interesting.
The other thing we run into is people spitting or biting. And so we've got, you know, hoods that we, our shields we're able to put up in front of them so they're not able to spit on the staff or their fellow prisoners.
Right. And when someone does that, what normally sets them off? Is it something that's happened like when they were earlier in the day before they got to you guys?
Probably earlier in their childhood, Chris, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. That's far more like it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it could be a lot of things like that. And as Chief was talking about, this the rip restraint system that we use, they also have like mittens that can cover their hands where they cannot grip anything. So we do get some inmates that like to pull out their stuff and do whatever, and we run into that quite frequently, actually. And we'd have to tie them to the seat and put these mittens on so they can't successfully get anything done.
Okay.
So that happens.
Very well put.
That happens because they haven't been around females in a while, and then there's females on the aircraft.
Right. Let's jump to the most interesting, I think, for me anyway, part of JPATS, the private jet service that some of your clientele receive. How does it happen that, for instance, R. Kelly was in a private jet?
Yeah, Chris. So, you know, a lot of the determination is not made by JPATS itself. We do weigh in and we do advise on who we think would be a good candidate for a smaller aircraft. The Marshal Service Prisoner Operations Division is really our customer. And so when we haul prisoners for them, they have a lot of the direction and as far as how the prisoner needs to be transported. We also assess each flight and each prisoner and make a determination, hey, this is somebody that should go on a large aircraft or someone that should go on a smaller aircraft. And so I would say probably 90% of the people that are on that smaller aircraft are medical problems and issues, right?
All right. And I would figure somebody like R. Kelly obviously has a charge that is in prison considered, kind of the lowest of the low. Am I right on that?
You have those type of guys with those charges on the plane every day,
right?
On the big plane. But
an inmate who potentially can harm R. Kelly gets some kind of fame within the system, doesn't
he? Oh, sure, absolutely. So those guys, are more known because of their celebrity.
Uh-huh.
So it helps to be able to put them on a smaller aircraft when you can. But one of the other factors is that some of these guys need to go to a different location than our large aircraft would have the capability of going. It's better to use a smaller aircraft to get those guys to certain locations.
Right. R. Kelly came through Oklahoma City?
Correct.
I think he did, didn't he?
Yeah, he's been through a few times.
Yeah. A few times. He's a frequent flyer?
Yeah, he is a frequent flyer.
Yeah. You don't want points on this particular airline?
No. I think you go negative.
Yeah. I don't know how the experience was for you, but I know that Joe Mark moved R. Kelly. Was there anything notable about those flights with him?
The only thing I could say about R. Kelly was that to talk to him, he really seemed like a nice guy, and he came off very personable.
Right.
And he was very respectful to me and my crew, and he made several comments about flying. He did not like to fly. He told me that most places he went, he did on the ground.
Uh-huh.
So that was kind of surprising to me.
Right. And you were familiar with his charges, obviously.
Oh, sure.
And do you get that a lot where somebody is charged with a pretty heinous crime and appears to be nice, respectful, and somebody you want to hang out with?
You know what? Most people would be surprised, but I think that's probably why they're so successful at victimizing people, is because they come across is very personable and likable, And I think that's probably how they lure people, you know, into their trap. So, yeah, I was surprised. I was a little bit surprised that he was as personable as he was.
Mm-hmm. Mark, what was your experience?
He didn't really say much to me. He just he did mention that he hated to fly and it made him sick and then he's scared.
But you didn't take it personally.
No, no, not at all.
And Mark, was it true that you did ask him to? To sing.
I was going to ask him to sing I Believe I Could Fly, and he just kind of laughed a little bit. So, you know.
Chris Brown sang to me when I moved
here. Yeah, he did sing
it. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he sat right behind me, and of course, you know, we didn't ask for it, but he sang the whole flight.
I think it was a nervous tick thing.
Yeah.
Was it any good?
Yeah.
Was he on key?
I can sing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? All right. He's got pipes. Yeah.
He's made millions singing, so
but you get in the studio, all kinds of people can sing.
Yeah.
But when you're like cuffed up, man, if you can sing, then
the guy did it.
Okay,
he did it.
Then you're legit.
He's pretty legit. So
all right,
yeah, he was taking requests. All the guys behind him were all putting in their requests. So it's pretty interesting.
Okay,
yeah.
Recently, you had Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yep, she was transported on the small aircraft.
On the small aircraft.
Yep.
Who else have you had through here lately that we would all?
I think one of the things to point out, Chris, is that anybody you can think of that's recently been in federal criminal issues or problems, we've touched them. So, you know, think back to January 6th and you've got a lot of folks that have been transported back to D.C.
Right.
For court hearings regarding the events of January 6th. Including the QAnon shaman. He was recently on one of our flights. Several years ago, I think most people will be very familiar with the problems that arose with the U.S. gymnastics team and the doctor that was prosecuted for sexually assaulting some of the gymnasts.
Right.
We transported him, Larry Nasser.
Right,
He came through the system.
Do you have to take into consideration some of the charges against an inmate in terms of where you put them on the plane, or if they're in for child pornography, if they're considered a snitch?
It can, especially if, you know, when we're picking them up from the BOP in the mornings, if they let us know that, you know, a certain inmate has maybe been a dropout or they're a sex offender, and they, you know, other inmates know that they're a sex offender and they want to keep them separated in the BOP system, we can try to help. But as you've seen on our airplane today, that it's hard for us to really keep them separated completely.
Do the other inmates know do they let that other inmate know, hey, we know about you?
I'm assuming that they would, but most of the time that stuff's going to happen like once they get to the prison system, not usually on our aircraft.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's times actually just to touch on that, we have what we know prior to, we have what we call separatees. So it could be somebody that's testifying against, you know, other defendants or something.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
they end up on the same airplane sometimes. So
wow.
We've got ways of marking them, and we just separate them the best you can. You may put one in the back of the plane, one in the front of the airplane, and even or however it works out the best. So even like during the bathroom calls, like Mark mentioned earlier, the pee calls, they have to walk past each other every once in a while. So we just keep an extra eye on them. Wow. We mark them so the whole crew knows who they are.
Right.
You know, our main mission is obviously to transport prisoners in support of the American federal judicial system, right? Outside of that, though, we are at times tasked by the Attorney General to support in times of national emergencies. Within the last couple of years, we've done a variety of missions to support the American taxpayer and to help them out, and including relief efforts that were needed when the hurricane went through Puerto Rico.
Yeah, I believe that's Maria, wasn't it?
Yeah, Maria.
4 years ago. Yeah.
And so that's a very intense time for JPATS, where we were running a series of 9, 10, 11, 12 missions in a row without stop. So back to back to back to back and constantly flying, taking relief supplies down, as well as bringing prisoners out that were the facility was damaged by the hurricane. So we were bringing prisoners out of Puerto Rico.
You mentioned helping the taxpayer. No one ever called me and said, do you need a private jet? So. I didn't get that kind of help.
Well, you have to indict it to
to be invited. That's it.
Yeah, invited to be invited. Yeah. Okay. Look, there is there's a pro and a con. Maybe I'll just stay as I am.
I remember back when I first came here back in 2005, we responded to Hurricane Katrina. And being some of the only airplanes flying in that area at the time, uh-huh. we landed at the airport, and I kid you not, it looked like a scene out of MASH. The only thing that you could see looking out toward the city were helicopters. And they were literally flying over the neighborhoods there in the Ninth Ward, picking up people and dropping them off at the airport, picking them up off of rooftops, you know, in the water, wherever they could get them. And they were dropping them off at the airport. And me and the officer in charge that was with me on that mission, we were walking around the airport and looking for just anybody that knew what was going on. And we come across the deputy sheriff there that was at the airport. And the officer in charge asked us, hey, who's running things here right now at the airport? And that deputy looked at the marshal that was with me and said, you are. So, yeah, so, I mean, that's how crazy it was. I mean, those guys had no idea what was going on or how to deal with all the people that were coming in. It was a pretty bad deal. And there were people literally hanging on, just to the very end of their life. They had people that they would bring and drop off at the airport that didn't make it. They had a makeshift morgue set up in the airport. It was pretty traumatic. You know, people had whatever they could grab, you know, in their mm-hmm. arms and brought it with them. And we moved a lot of people out of there. We were there for seems like a week, three or four airplanes full, round the clock, moving people around the country, relocating them just to get them to some places of. That they could get back on their feet. So,
and you were moving inmates as well at this time?
The majority was all just civilians.
Oh,
just
okay.
Civilians, yeah, right there out of New Orleans. I think we, toward the end, we did end up moving some prisoners out of there, but the majority was just civilians.
Right. So, did you move animals as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there were people that had their animals, and we loaded them right up and took them with us. So... Yeah, so we've gotten involved with quite a bit of mm-hmm. things other than just moving inmates.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So I just want to go back because I know there's more in the entirety of your career. There's a lot of years between you guys, and I know that you've moved more people that we would have heard of. So I just kind of want to jump back and see if any others come to mind that are worth mentioning.
Brian Mitchell. He was the Elizabeth Smart kidnapper. Right. I called him. I was listening to Joe talk about Chris Brown singing to him, and it made me think of a flight with him. He sat it right next to me because the certain aircraft we had, there was a couch. That was the only place they could sit by the door, so one of us has to sit for security reasons by the door, so I ended up sitting right next to
This sounds like one of the small jets.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we're, you know, it's quiet and there's nothing really going on. And all of a sudden, he tried to get real close to my face with his face and asked me if I liked music. And obviously, once I got him kind of away from my face, he started singing really, really loud, like church hymns. So,
just out of the blue.
Out of the blue. Just, yeah, no, there's no no music prompt there. It was just, okay. I guess he was wanting to know if I liked music that well or not. Right.
I mean, and that's probably part of it is like you have to be, like we talked about before, a lot of things are going to happen that you don't see coming. They're just going to, right? They're just going to happen.
Absolutely.
Right.
When you said that, I forgot when Chris was singing to us back there, right before we landed, he said, hey, Marshall, you got any more of those bologna sandwiches? So he obviously hadn't been eating any bologna for a while, so he was enjoying the bologna sandwich.
So this is another vote for the bologna
The bologna sandwich, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. And speaking of bologna sandwiches.
Jared Fogle. Little Subway guy.
Jared.
I forgot about him, yeah.
I'm sure our bologna sandwich is probably not as good as the old cold cut trio from Subway, probably.
And Jared got done up on some child-related charges, right?
Correct.
So in the beginning, you guys were traveling him on a jet?
We took him on the small jet till the point where he got sentenced, and then we put him on the big jet with everybody else.
You guys touched Joe Exotic.
Yeah, he did come through. I wasn't on that mission, but he's been through a couple of times, actually, on our aircraft. Yeah.
Yeah, so he was prosecuted, Chris, here in Oklahoma City, the Western District of Oklahoma. And so upon prosecution, he was sentenced and designated to a BOP facility. Somewhere along the way, he had some appeals process going on, and so we hauled him back here for the appeals process. And one of the things that I think was kind of interesting was he was, you know, and who knows what the conversation was he had with his attorney, but part of that process was that, you know, he was convinced that when he was on his way back, he was going to have a reduced sentence or even be set free. And so interestingly enough, when he got back, the judge increased his sentence. So he was not very, happy when we had to haul him back to the BOP facility after.
Didn't go his way.
It did not go his way.
He
just kept mentioning something about Carol Baskin, but I don't know exactly what it is.
One that kind of bothered me, you know, just the nature of those crimes, Michael Vick.
Yeah, we had Michael on the large aircraft. I'd never seen him on the small aircraft, but on the large aircraft, and I got a chance to kind of talk to him, and he just kind of mentioned that, you know, that's something they did when he was younger. And once he started making money and got popularity in the NFL or whatever, that's something that never disappeared.
Sammy the Bull Gravano.
Sammy was very respectful. You know, I don't know him in his personal life other than the few hours or so that he was on the airplane, but he was very respectful, quiet.
By the way, did you even really need to say that you don't know him in his personal life? I mean, was that a question?
That's for the record.
Oh, you caught that.
Jeez.
Well, I mean, I guess I should have said, obviously, I don't. Yeah, he no problems at all. We had him a certain time of his prison career where he was being taken care of by the government prior to his getting back into the criminal enterprise that he was doing before. So,
yeah, most of those mob guys, you know, we've seen a lot of them over the years. Most of them, they're pretty chill. And if the prisoners that are flying with them know who they are, they'll sit there and talk the whole flight, just telling stories to those guys.
Right. Yeah, that's going to be
pretty interesting. So we really don't have any trouble out of those guys.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Whitey Bulger, he was one of them that we moved. And
you moved Whitey Bulger?
We moved old Whitey, and we moved him several times, actually. And he wasn't any problem for us. You know, he complained a lot, you know, too hot, too cold, you know, things like that. But for the main part, he wasn't any trouble for us. Actually, the last time we saw Whitey, we had dropped him off there at in Pennsylvania, and they took him to a prison there, the BOP facility, where he was actually killed that night.
And then the Marshal Service took all of his assets and auctioned them for victim reparation. Made some good money, apparently. You had the underwear bomber.
They made a pretty big deal about him, moving him. We got put into a hangar separately, and they shut the doors, and we loaded him up, and then they opened the doors, taxied us back out, and then we took off. So no public could see him because they were, you know, trying to look out for media type stuff.
Was there media looking?
There were some helicopters, I guess, supposedly. Oh, okay. You know, somewhere in the distance. I never seen them, but SOG had all that taken care of. So.
Uh-huh. Okay. The Special Operations Group. And you had Martha Stewart?
Martha Stewart. She didn't say a word. So she just kind of sat there.
Okay. And then, sadly, only because I really liked his character, but the guy who played Billy in the Predator movie.
Yeah, we had him on the plane. He's a very large guy, by the way. He had aged a little bit, hard to recognize. But, yeah, he opened up to me when I kind of acknowledged who he was, that you know, what had happened. So, yeah, we had him on the plane.
Yeah, well, I liked his character. So I'm sorry that he found himself on your plane.
Me too.
And then the Somali pirates. I'm the captain.
We had a couple of those guys come across. And, of course, somebody, I was another prisoner that mentioned, I'm the captain now. Of course, you know, the pirates turned around and laughed and said, yeah, it's not so funny anymore. But, yeah, man, we've had all those guys. The very first Survivor winner we had on the plane.
Oh, that's right. What was his name again?
Hatch. Richard Hatch.
Right, that's right.
Yeah. Really tall guy. And, of course, it was he was pretty easy to pick out, and several of the prisoners recognized him right off the bat and said, "Hey, what'd you do with the money?"
Sometimes people come to you, just for the thrill.
Yeah, so Joan London, I believe the show was Behind Closed Doors. She came to us and wanted to act like a prisoner all day long, so we put her in a orange jumpsuit and put the three-piece suit on her, which is the handcuffs and leg irons and belly chain, and we put her on the airplane with the other inmates and hauled her around all day long.
And that made for an enlightening piece?
Yeah. I'm sure it was real exciting.
She may have called Martha Stewart and said, "I had the best bologna sandwich ever."
You wouldn't believe
it. Nice. Gourmet.
And the people.
All right. Well, I think we've learned many things today. We've learned that if you don't like bologna, don't get indicted. I think that's a takeaway. So I just want to say thank you very much to Mark McPherson, the chief of JPATS. Thank you very much, sir. Jeff Kelly, the aviation enforcement manager, and Mark Johnson, Laurel Edwards, and Joe Geist. Thank you all very much for... Okay. Sorry. Joe, how do you pronounce your name?
Gist.
Have you thought about changing it to Geist?
I have. Trust me.
Okay. Thank you. So, thank you most of all to Joe Gist for participating today.
And finally, Chasing Evil is produced with the cooperation of the United States Marshal Service and contains interviews with current and retired employees as well as other persons. Opinions, positions, and views expressed by any of them may not reflect the official views, positions, or policies of the United States Marshal Service. Stay safe, everyone.